Hello, and welcome to this episode of Felonious, a podcast where we discuss the realm of true crime, from chilling cold cases to the wild and wacky. We'll explore it all with a perfect blend of seriousness and humour. My name is Emma.
And I'm Nazia. To keep up to date with what's coming up, be sure to follow us on Instagram at felonious.pod and visit our website feloniouspod.com. We hope you enjoy this episode, so let's get to it.
Nicely done.
Bada boom. Right.
So what have you been up to this week?
Well, I had a good start to the week, and then Tuesday night I started coming down with stomach flu.
Oh, lovely.
So since Tuesday I've just been not eating much. My bodily functions haven't been great. I won't go into too much detail. and I've just been napping. You know when like people become parents, they say sleep when the baby sleeps. That's literally what I've been doing. When my daughter's been napping, I've been napping because I've just been absolutely wiped out. But I had my first proper meal today in like 48 hours.
And you went all out?
I went a bit overboard because Wednesday night, my partner cooked, I guess it's like a typical French winter dish, but like a vegan version. So it's brown lentils with like carrots and onions. And it usually has, so it's not bacon, but it's called lardon. It's basically pig meat, but they've got a vegan version in France now. It's really nice. But yeah, so it had that in. And then there were some like vegan sausages. So he was eating that on Wednesday and I couldn't have my portion because I was too ill. So I had that for lunch today and that was a bit heavy. And then for dinner, I had kimchi noodles with some vegetable gyozas. My stomach has gone on a roller coaster this week.
You've got the burn to look forward to as well.
Yeah. I know Alex isn't looking forward to it either. But I'll tell you something. Like the last time I had a stomach flu was when I was in Cambodia, as you do, you get ill on holiday. But yeah, no, that was like years ago. So I've very rarely in my life had a stomach flu. And it's a horrible thing to go through anyway. But when you're a parent, it's even worse because like you're already tired and then you've got this little human to try and run around after.
Yeah, they don't understand what's going on. So they're just being their energetic self.
Yesterday I had I just had a herbal tea just to see if that would like help settle my stomach. And then I could feel myself getting ready to, sorry, listeners, bit graphic, but I could feel myself getting ready to vomit. So I just had to like restrain my kid in the high chair just to stop her from going anywhere like that she shouldn't, or follow me into the bathroom while I went and like puked up whatever contents my stomach had left in it. So, I mean, thankfully today my partner took the day off work to help and that was much appreciated. Yeah, not fun.
No. My week sounds completely boring to yours.
I think I would have rather have had your week, to be honest.
I can't really remember what I've done this week, to be fair. I think it's mostly podcast stuff.
Yeah, you've been like picking up the slack. I was watching, researching for the next episode in bed. It was like, don't know if I really want to be watching this. We'll mention what we're going to discuss next time at the end of the episode. But yeah, I was researching in between my naps.
Oh, that's dedication. You're sick and doing podcast stuff.
I think I would have rather have done it when I was in good health. So yeah, no, thank you for picking up the slack.
You're welcome.
But you've also found some interesting news articles.
Oh, yes.
To discuss.
Yes, listeners. Again this week, Emma goes on the internet and finds stuff you may not have heard of or forgot about or just weren't interested in at the time.
Who cares? It's your rabbit hole and we're going to go down it.
Yes. So follow me. which one do you want to do first?
Let's talk about the science-y one.
Science?
the tantalizing sign of possible life on faraway world.
Yes, is there life on Mars? No, it's K2-18b.
Ah.
Yeah. Not as exciting, really, is it?
No.
But according to this BBC News website article, they've detected sign of life on a faraway planet. And it's a molecule.
Okay.
I was expecting something like huge when I read the headline on the BBC News app. But no, it's a molecule called dimethyl sulfide, or DMS for short.
What makes a molecule life?
Ah, so this molecule is only produced when there is life, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay. So that's their sign. The product of life is this molecule. Is that correct? Is that what they're saying?
Yeah, basically.
Okay, right, got you.
But this planet isn't around the corner.
Okay. Is it out of reach from Elon Musk and what's his name? Mr. Amazon.
Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, that's it.
At the moment, yes.
Okay, good.
In the near future, I'm guessing they'll want to take advantage of this somehow, like they've taken advantage of everything else. But anyway, that's my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 120 light years away.
Right, okay. So, yeah, we've got a bit of time.
Yeah. They've also detected methane and carbon dioxide.
Okay.
So, yeah. By finding these molecules and gases and stuff, they've come to the conclusion that it has water on board the planet.
Do you think there's like space cows?
Yeah, I'm hoping for something like that. I was hoping, as it's a water ocean planet, some dolphins. Some like really intelligent dolphins that have
dolphins like, and cows.
Yeah. And they've built like their metropolis.
Yes.
And they're super intelligent, more intelligent than us. And they know all about us, but didn't bother to say hello because they've seen what we're doing to the planet. So,
but some white person in the near future, sorry, because I know you're white, but I hope you don't mind me saying this, that some white person's going to go over there and try and colonise it, aren't they?
I mean, yeah, it's what we do.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys need to stop that. Can you tell your people to stop that, please?
I'm in the wrong gender.
Ah, yeah, that's true. They're not going to listen to you.
So, yes, that was my first find of this week. My second find, you're going to love this one. Goldilocks burglar caught napping.
Was it a blonde white girl trying people's porridge?
No, actually, it wasn't.
Ah.
So, a couple from Lancashire returned from their holiday to discover a burglar fast asleep in their bed. The couple were amazed to find the intruder had done washing up, bought some food, and even washed his own underwear.
Nice.
The owner said it was a bit like Goldilocks and the Three Bears, although he was more like Baby Bear.
Wait, did this happen? In the UK?
This happened in Lancashire, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The owner said that he had made himself some meals, washed his socks and underwear, and had done a grocery shop. And then she goes on to say, he did burn an old saucepan, but that happens.
They sound pretty chill.
Yeah, she is. They are pretty chill. The owner said, I wasn't frightened, but more surprised, and I knew I had to take control of the situation. He said he rang police, and the burglar was still asleep when officers came to arrest him.
Wow.
Their window cleaner later told the couple he had seen the burglar in the house and presumed he was their grandson. The owners felt fairly sympathetic, although he did break in, but it was neatly done.
I hope they changed their locks, at least.
Yeah. But, I mean, I didn't get that kind of burglar when my storage place got burgled at the start of the year.
Yeah, no, they weren't nice burglars.
No, they left shit everywhere.
Yeah.
But they didn't wash their underwear, so...
If they didn't wash their underwear, I mean, so going back to this situation, if he washed his underwear, that means he used their toilet. and maybe their shower and...
Possibly.
Yeah. What else did he do?
That's about it, really.
That they know of.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder what he was doing. Bizarre. I don't know what to say about that. That's just bizarre. He's just like made himself at home.
Yeah. Well, those are my finds for this week.
Yeah, very, very different finds, but very interesting. We've got life in a distant planet, and we've got very polite burglars.
Yeah, we don't know what crime is committed on this distant planet.
Hopefully none, if Earth stay out of it, if the humans stay away from it.
True. It depends what conflict the... space cows and dolphins have.
Yeah. Oh, I bet space cows will be well cute.
Why space cows?
It's just methane reminds me of cows.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So yeah,
cow farts.
There must be like cows just farting around in space.
That's how they keep warm.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, shall we move on to less lighter... topics?
Okay. We are talking about crime here.
Yeah, but like there's no one making breakfast and, you know, doing chores in someone's house.
Yeah,
and there's no space cows in our stories.
Yeah, not in this episode,
unfortunately. We're going to bring it down a little bit, sorry guys. Going to bring it down a few notches.
So in today's episode, we'll be focusing on Portugal, the land that brought us tempura. Pastel de nata.
See, I did not know that. Sorry to interrupt, but I did not know that about tempura.
Yes. So apparently Portuguese missionaries back in the day went over to Japan and introduced the Japanese to tempura.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's why.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. So, yeah, pretty interesting.
Yeah, sorry, carry on.
I will carry on. The land that brought us tempura, pastel de nata, Cristiano Ronaldo,
blech,
whoever the fuck that is, the first country to decriminalise drugs.
Woohoo!
And one of the first to abolish the death penalty.
Woohoo!
We will discuss three people who were executed in Portugal during the days of capital punishment. We will begin with Diogo Alves and debunk his claim to fame, followed by Luisa de Jesus, who wasn't as nice as she sounds. And finally, we will talk about the well-educated pet-killing Francisco de Matos Lobo. Hold on to your heads, listeners, and let's begin.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of gruesome discussions today. Now, I know last week at the end of the episode, we said we were just going to discuss Diogo, but on researching, you found that he wasn't actually the first serial killer and he wasn't actually the last one to receive capital punishment in Portugal.
No.
So yeah, today's episode, we're going to be discussing a lot of death and murder. So that's going to include just a whole scope of things, I guess, from adults to babies and animals.
Yeah. I thought this was supposed to be a lighter episode.
Nah. Well, I mean, yeah, it's not really, is it?
No.
But we do discuss the death penalty. Not that that's much better. Probably going to be some mispronunciations because there's going to be a lot of Portuguese terminology. A lot of swearing because these people are vile that we're talking about, and they deserve it.
Yeah, and we'll get frustrated with the mispronouncing of the Portuguese.
Yeah. And, you know, as usual, we're not in any way, we do not support the actions of these criminals. We just like talking about how shit they are. So, should we get started?
Yeah, let's begin. So, have you ever wanted to meet a 213-year-old man?
I think so. Is he still alive?
Well, you can meet him, but you have to travel to Portugal and you can only see his head.
Yeah, I would warn people about Googling this.
Yeah, there might be some gruesome pictures that come up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you don't want to see just the pictures and you want to see the real thing, apparently you can.
Yeah, just go to Portugal. I'll tell you where later on. Born in 1810, Diogo Alves was originally from Galicia. Oh, it started already.
I think it's Galicia.
Galicia.
Because in Spain they say Valencia, not Valencia.
Okay.
So I'm guessing it's Galicia. If we have any Spanish-speaking listeners, please let us know.
Yeah, please. So Diogo Alves was originally from Galicia in Spain, but moved to Lisbon, Portugal, in his early teens. He had the nickname of Pacanda, which means blow in Portuguese, as he had a horse-riding accident when he was young where he fell and hit his head. He worked at a number of manor houses as a servant and then was promoted to the position of coachman, where he took care of the horses. He gained the trust of employers who lent him large sums of money as he was reputed to be trustworthy and a good payer. But his life then took a turn and he started to drink, gamble, was known to take part in antisocial behaviours, and he cut off ties with his parents in Spain. He then started to commit petty crimes and robberies. These actions were supposedly spurred on by his affair with an innkeeper, Maria Gertrudes, or Gertrudes, maybe?
No idea. Sorry, can't help you with that one.
Maria helped find his victims. And what is a story without a temptress?
Always blame a woman, eh?
Yeah. We cause men to do everything.
Yes, damn those seductive women.
It's believed that Diogo managed to steal and falsify keys to the underground tunnel which led to the Aguas Livres aqueduct. Completed in 1748, the aqueduct was initially built to provide drinking water to Lisbon, but it was also used as a bridge into the city, so many farmers and merchants from outside the capital would use it to transport their goods to sell in the city. During 1836 and 1840, it was under the cover of darkness that Diogo would prey on his helpless victims. He would rob them, blindfold them, and then take them to the top of the 60-metre or 200-foot tall aqueduct and push them off. It is thought that Diogo killed approximately 70 people, but the deaths were treated as suicide at the time due to the country's economic and political crisis. The police decided to close the aqueduct in order to stop the suicides. But this didn't stop Diogo from killing. He decided to form a gang who burgled houses of well-to-do families. One night in 1839 or 1840, a number of sources say both, he and his gang decided to burgle Pedro de Andrade's house, a wealthy doctor. The gang ended up murdering four family members of the doctor. This, however, did end Diogo Alves' killing streak. He was caught by police and sentenced to death, and he was hung in February 1841. At the time of his death, the interest in the pseudoscience of phrenology was quite high. According to phrenology, an individual's character can be deduced by the size of bumps on the head, and in turn discover whether that person is more inclined to commit violent acts. With this in mind, excuse the pun, scientists at the Medical Surgical School of Lisbon decided that Diogo's head should be removed from his body in order to study his brain. His head was placed in formaldehyde in a glass jar, where it has remained ever since, with no signs of it having ever been examined. It is currently on display at the University of Lisbon. Apart from having a famous head, Diogo Alves has been rumoured to be Portugal's first serial killer, and the last man to be hung in the country. But both of these claims to fame are incorrect.
Yes, I mean, still a fucked up man.
Yeah.
And I read somewhere when he was, like, tried and executed for the murder of this doctor and his family, at that point they didn't think he was connected to the deaths in the aqueduct.
No, they didn't. They just arrested him on the murder of the doctor and his family. They didn't connect it to the aqueduct at all. Because they were having such a hard time in the country economically and politically that they just put it down to suicides because they thought that everyone was depressed and was having a tough time.
Yeah.
But it turned out not to be the case.
No, well.
And our next person isn't much better.
No. I wanted to make a joke saying, of course a man's going to be rumoured to be the first serial killer instead of a woman. But, yeah. So our next case is Luisa de Jesus. She is a very, very horrible woman. So she was born on the 10th of December in 1748 in, oh my gosh, Figueira,
yeah.
Figueira de Lovau?
Lovau, yeah, that's how I would say
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I guess so. Sorry, guys. I'm really sorry, any Portuguese listeners. And she was married to Manuel Gomez, and they had a daughter called Manuel Rodriguez. Did I type that correctly? I'm doubting my notes now.
Yeah, I'm doubting them too.
Sorry, I was probably ill when I wrote this. Can't remember. <worries. laughs> Anyway, they had a daughter. And during this time, they had something called foundling wheels, which were usually in churches. And these foundling wheels, they're basically like a cylinder set up on a building, and they acted like a revolving door. And what they were used for were to deposit babies. It's such a weird thing.
These things were usually in places of worship, like churches, and I don't know what other place they would have for worship back then.
Yeah, I mean, what I could find was usually in churches, but I'm guessing they were in a few other places as well. But the reason why they had these was to reduce the number of infanticides. So mothers who are unable to or unwilling to raise their children could leave them there anonymously. So they put the baby in, the cylinder turned, and the baby was rotated into the building, and then a bell would ring to alert the caretakers that a baby had been left there. And other people could then adopt the babies.
Oh my God, it sounds like Deliveroo.
Yeah, a bit. It's like a baby vending machine, except, yeah. I'm going to stop while I'm ahead.
Yeah.
But every time someone adopted a baby, and they were called Rodas in Portugal, but every time someone adopted a baby, they would receive 600 reis, and they would also receive 66 centimetres of woolen cloth, I guess, to clothe the baby. So Louisa, she developed a habit of adopting babies who were left in the foundling wheel. And no one actually seemed to keep track of how many she was adopting.
Yeah, no records or anything.
I think there were records, but she kind of falsified her names.
Ah.
And I guess people, like, no one recognised her. Well, anyway, we'll discuss that further along. But her crimes were discovered initially by Angelia Maria, who on the 1st of April 1772 in Monte Arroyo?
Arroyo, yeah.
Yeah, who was a Rhoda staff member. She discovered the corpse of a child near an olive tree, and there was still the cloth around the neck of this child that was used to strangle them. And the staff recognised the child as one who Louisa had adopted. They then found near these olive trees more bodies, 15 to be exact, and they had all been violently killed and strangled.
Oh God, that's nasty.
Yeah. Investigators then searched Louisa's house, where they found a pot containing several pieces of corpses which were decomposing. It was not possible to confirm how many bodies there were, but they were able to find three skulls. They also then found four heads hidden under straw. 10 more heads were found buried, but there were no traces of the bodies. Which is like, what the fuck were you doing with them?
Yeah, but husband must have known something about it, surely.
Unless he was in on it, I don't know. I don't understand what it is with serial killers that leave bodies in their homes. Like, the smell and the there's going to be, like, flies and maggots and what is... I mean, obviously, why did they commit these crimes in the first place? But then to... And what was she doing with the bodies?
But that's part of the obsession, isn't it? I guess. Part of the criminal mindset. Because we don't understand because we're not serial killers, so...
No, exactly. So, for some of the children, Louisa had used fake names. Or she used the names of other actual people.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so those people were then interrogated, obviously, because the Rhoda would have had their names on record, but then they claimed that they had never received any children. So the investigators realised it was just Louisa. In total, she had accumulated 20,000 reis from all the children she had taken.
I'm guessing that's a lot of money.
I'm guessing so.
Yeah.
And initially, she confessed to only some of the murders. However, after multiple interrogations, she confessed to more. In the end, she confessed to asphyxiating 28 babies, but investigators found the bodies of 33 out of the 34 that were reported missing.
Oh, so one's still missing?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And to make this even more fucked up, she was only 22 years old.
Fucking hell.
Like, I mean, I know things were different back then. People married and had babies and had to grow up a lot earlier back then. But yeah, fucking hell, that is young.
I guess that's middle-aged back then.
I don't know. Yeah, but still.
Still no excuse.
Yeah.
But something must have happened to her to make her want to do this.
Especially when she's got a child of her
own. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
And oh, it just...
It does make me wonder if the husband was in on it.
And, you know, like, these women, they were trying to do right by their children by giving them a chance at life, by, you know, putting them in these foundling wheels. And 34 mothers just end up delivering their babies to their deaths without realising, you know.
Oh, God. I hope they didn't realise afterwards.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess because it was done anonymously, no one would know. But it's just awful. So, but I guess if you were a mother at that time and you'd heard the news, you can't help but wonder, like, was one of those babies the one, you know, my child?
Yeah, of course. It would be natural, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's just absolutely fucked up.
Mm.
So anyway, according to some records, for her punishment, she was apparently paraded through the streets and then tortured. Some records apparently state that her hands were cut off and she was executed by a garrote, which is a brutal method of strangulation. Her body was also burnt after so that it couldn't be buried. And I read in that research paper I found, according to her sentencing documents, she would also have to pay 50,000 reis for the expenses of the Court of Appeal, which I found a bit bizarre because it's like...
You just killed her.
Well, yeah, A, she probably doesn't have that money.
Well, she had 20,000.
Yeah, but she probably spent it all, I don't know.
Yeah,
but,
true.
And then you're going to kill her anyway, unless they held her family, like, to debt. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, must have done. Unless she had property, I'm guessing.
Yeah. And also, according to the sentencing documents, she wasn't the only one accused of these crimes. Alongside her, the accused included Antonia Angelica, Margarita Joaquina, Leocardo, I guess that's how you pronounce it, Maria Conceicao? I don't know how to pronounce that. And the defendant bachelor, Pascal Luis Ferreira da Silva. So there were other people apparently in on it, but I guess she was the main perpetrator.
So it didn't say what these other people did?
No, it was just in this research document that was like looking at female serial killers and the death penalty. It just said that the sentencing documents listed these other people. So I don't know if they were also tried or if they were proven to be associated with the crimes.
Oh, it could have been the people that you said before, the fake names and or the names of other people.
Possibly, yeah. Yeah, maybe. But, I mean, to, like, kill over 30 babies, that's some next level fucked up.
Yeah, I dread to think what... I just hope those babies didn't realise, but...
Yeah, like, I don't even want to know how old... Not that it makes a difference, but I don't even want to know how old they would have been or whatever. But, I mean, I have... Like, even though I don't agree with the death penalty, I think in this situation, they could have done way worse to her.
Yeah.
Like, she deserved the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
Because that is some...
She deserved all of that and more.
A bit more.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was apparently the first actual serial killer. And my goodness, she put that bar quite high.
Yeah, she did. So from the first serial killer... In Portugal, we move on to one of the last men to be executed in Portugal, Francisco de Matos Lobo. He was born in 1814 in Amira de Toyo in Portugal. I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong. His parents were quite wealthy, so he was able to get a very good higher education compared to others at the time, and something his parents were very proud of. Apparently, he was involved in a lot of local politics and was called a spokesperson of the people of Gavieo. And according to my research sources, he met his cousin Adelaide when he was young and fell in love with her. Now, a number of other sources have said that it was his aunt, but they were in blog articles rather than, you know, reviewed books and so on, reviewed papers. So I'm going to stick with the cousin for now. Anyway, years later, he moved to Lisbon, near to where his cousin Adelaide Philippe da Costa was living. And she was a widow and she had two children. And Francisco decided to start visiting her and they formed a relationship. She would, according to the research as well, she would often have other men visit her, which made Francisco quite jealous. So on the night of July 25th in 1841, Francisco and Adelaide were having an argument. The argument escalated and Francisco ended up killing Adelaide, one of her children, and her housemaid. There are a number of sources that say he also threw the family's pet from the roof window. He stabbed Adelaide's daughter, who pretended to be dead, and it was her cries after Francisco had left the scene that alerted an English family in a nearby house, who then called the police. Adelaide's daughter was able to identify him before she died from her injuries, and Francisco was immediately arrested. While he was in prison, he attempted suicide twice, and he was found guilty at the trial on August the 30th, about 35 days after the murders, and was sentenced to death by hanging. Prisoners who were sentenced to death during this time were allowed 3 days before their execution to prepare, and during this time, Francisco was put under the care of a prison priest and a nobleman who was obliged by virtue to ask the sovereign to pardon the prisoner. Francisco asked to speak to the jailer, and when the jailer appeared, Francisco collapsed in tears and asked if anyone else was imprisoned for the crime, because if there was, Francisco thought he would be innocent.
What?
Yeah, I'm guessing he was in some sort of denial.
Yeah. Okay.
When the time of execution neared, Francisco was clothed in a white dress. The cord was placed around his neck and he was given a crucifix to hold and was then taken to the place where he committed the murders. But he was carried in a chair as he was too weak to walk. He acknowledged his guilt and at his request, the confession he had signed was read out to the public. The streets were full of angry people calling for his death. His death was delayed due to the sudden death of one of the priests who was exhorting him while he was being pulled up by the executioner. The executioner was not very experienced and Francisco was made to suffer horribly, and it apparently took him 4 hours to die because his neck did not break by the drop. His execution took place in April 1842.
Wow, what a way to go.
Yeah. Francisco de Matos Lobo was one of the last men to be executed in Portugal. Francisco's head was also a victim of the study of phrenology. Unlike Diego Alves's head, Francisco's was actually dissected and studied, in which they found no abnormal traits to say that he was meant to be a criminal. Bloody phrenology. His skull is on display at the University of Lisbon, just a few doors away from Diego's head.
I mean, I think back then, obviously the science would have been so limited in terms of like neurology and criminology.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say the health system is not...
They had quite limited resources.
Yeah, but they conducted all sorts of experiments back then, didn't they? Because they just didn't understand about the human body and they wanted to know everything there was to know.
Yeah, and, you know, something like the brain, it's a very, very complex organ and scientists are still learning about it to this day. But, it just reminds me of more recent criminals. So, you know that NFL player, I've forgotten his name. Aaron Hernandez.
Hernandez, that's it.
But wasn't his brain like part of a research to look at like the effects of NFL like the on their mental health.
Yeah, I want to say that he commit suicide and then donate his.
I think he died by suicide in prison.
That's right.
I can't remember if his brain was, but I know like in that Netflix documentary, there were science, like they had people talking about the research that they're trying to do. And like his brain was of interest because he suffered from a lot of mental health issues. And then he committed like these murders. And they're wondering if all of the brain injuries that he
sustained.
Yeah, during gameplay had anything to do with that. But, you know, going back in time, there's some serial killers that have had brain injuries at some point in their life. So I think Richard Ramirez, I think he had some sort of head injury. There's another one I can't remember the name of.
Diogo Alves did as well, the guy that we just spoke about. He got hit in the head by a horse when he was young.
Yeah, I mean, not saying that everyone who, you know, for example, gets dropped on the head like as a child ends up becoming like psychotic serial killer, but maybe there's some connection.
Yeah, I was dropped on my head. This is a true story.
No way.
Yeah, I think I've got the psychotic part, but definitely not the serial killer part.
Can't remember if I've. Sometimes I wonder if I had bashed my head.
Yeah, apparently my next door neighbour came round. She was like really broody and she wanted to hold me. And my mother finally gave in and she apparently dropped me. I hit the floor. But I didn't lose any brains, I don't think, anyway.
Oh. I mean, my daughter's falling over all the time at the moment. And bashing her head. So I'm like, it's the only way she's going to learn her coordination. So I just let, obviously, to a degree, I'm supervising and like monitoring. But yeah, she donks her head a lot.
So does my dog. She's so clumsy. Like today, we were walking along and we walked past a staircase and it had like these iron railings. And she was so interested in the person that was coming up the stairs that she didn't see the iron railing, so her head just plonked on it.
Oh,
she's walked into a few trees before and a few lampposts.
Yeah.
Just because she's like too interested in other stuff that's going on.
Yeah, too distracted. But yeah, it is interesting about the... We're hoping to do an episode at some point in the future, aren't we?
Oh yeah, we're definitely going to do one about neurology and crime.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
And we're going to also do some episodes at some point about the death penalty in other countries. But we started with Portugal. So as we mentioned earlier, Portugal was one of the first countries in the world to end the death penalty. And the death penalty was abolished in 1852 for political crimes and in 1867 for civil crimes. However, the death penalty stopped being applied much earlier for both categories, so in 1834 for political crimes and 1846 for civil crimes. And in France, it was way later that they stopped the death penalty.
Yeah, I don't know what it was in Sweden.
Yeah, but we're gonna definitely cover a couple of cases that happened in France. And that ended in the death penalty. We've got that on our list. But maybe we should also look at Swedish crimes as well.
Yeah.
See what's happened.
Yeah. I like going back in history. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're really going on a bit of a history lesson here, aren't we?
Yeah.
It's not just crime. It's history.
It's history. We take you for a tour of everything.
Yeah.
From space to history to... clumsy dogs and...
Yeah, and neurology.
Neurology, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, didn't know that Portugal was one of the first to abolish the death penalty.
No, I didn't either. And it's so early as well. Like you were saying, compared to other countries.
Yeah, and like the US, for example.
Yes, yes. They've completely abolished drugs.
Yes, I didn't know that. That is so cool.
Which I think was fairly recently.
That's crazy. I mean, if You had said, like, told me to guess which country in Europe has abolished drugs. Like, I wouldn't have thought it would be Portugal.
No.
But that's pretty cool.
Mm.
Good for you, Portugal.
Yeah. You keep going, Portugal, with your 300 days of sunlight.
Yeah. They've got nice beers, apparently. I've never been.
No, I've never been. I need to go.
Yeah, maybe we'll go to Lisbon and visit Diogo.
Yeah.
And have some beers in the sun.
I also didn't know about a founding wheel. I didn't know what it was. And now I wish I didn't.
It's really interesting. I mean, it's at the end of the day, it's better than a baby being left on a cold doorstep in just a basket.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's very, like, funny invention. I wonder if there's any, like, historic buildings that still have them where people can visit them. I wonder if there's any protected historic buildings that still have those. Because that would be quite interesting.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And yeah, aqueducts.
Yeah. I'm going to always watch my back on an aqueduct now.
Yes. Especially if it's like 200 feet. That's a long way.
Yeah. I've always wanted to see an aqueduct though. I haven't actually seen one right up close. I've seen one like on the train, I think, once when I was going to Scotland from London.
Okay.
Yeah. But I've always wanted to see one. So that's on my list.
Yeah. We've got a weird list.
Yeah.
we've got a weird bucket list.
We should see what other crimes have been conducted on aqueducts.
Yeah, we can see what we've come up with.
Yeah, that might be a potential episode, listeners.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, if anyone knows of any crimes that have happened in other aqueducts, let us know and we'll happily talk about it.
Yeah, definitely. But speaking of other episodes, our next episode is going quite deep.
Even worse than this one.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know how we're going to find the humour in this one.
No. It's really horrible. So, yeah, it's a really horrible one. We're going to be discussing Felicia Kabuga, who was a Rwandan businessman and one of the main financiers of the genocide of the Tutsi community in Rwanda in 1994. And yeah, it's going to be grim.
Yeah.
It's also going to be quite interesting because it brings into a lot of the politics between Rwanda and other countries like the US and Britain and France.
And Germany.
And Germany.
And Switzerland.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, but it's also going to be pretty grim.
Yeah.
And it might be, I feel like it's going to be a long one again.
Yeah, this one's going to be pretty detailed.
Yeah. Today's one was short and sweet, but fucking horrible.
Yeah.
And next week's going to be long, detailed, and fucking horrible. Sorry, you shouldn't laugh. It's absolutely awful.
So lots to look forward to, listeners.
Yeah. Please join us next week.
Yeah. Please download and follow us wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for listening to the show. We hope you enjoyed this episode. You can find more information about the show on our website at feloniouspod.com or on our Instagram at feloniouspod.
Links to our show notes can be found in the episode description, as well as through our website and social media. You can visit our Contact Us page and tell us what you think about the show and if there are any cases you would like us to cover. We hope you join us for the next episode. Goodbye.
Bye.